from Connecticut, Renee Blake from KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Amanda Schauger and Elaine Higginbotham from KXCI in Tucson, Arizona, and Anne Alquist and Rebecca Cornthwaite from KFAI and Shackademic and Glenn Scott from Phillips Community Television in Minneapolis. Our Sprouts Collaboration Coordinator is Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks to the Pacifica Foundation for distribution assistance. I'm your host and producer, Debbie Leinhardt from KRFC in Fort Collins, Colorado. Tune in to next week's Sprouts, and until then, check us out on the web at www.sproutsradio.org.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is the Queen of Caffeine, and we're educating the masses.
You ready?
One.
Ya estamos grabando.
One, two, three.
Somos Oso Motley!
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. Listening to Augusto Cesar, Sandinista style, baby.
Hello, hello, Free Radio people. This is Augusto Cesar Sandino Segundo with a very special surprise for all you out there in radio listening land. Special shout out to Hoser for being the guy to give up the show so that we could have here live in the studio with you today two members of Oso Motley. So stay tuned. We're going to play some tracks. We're going to talk to these folks, and you're going to enjoy it. Give us a call in the studio, 427-3772.
Oh, now I'm coming for ya. I'm in the cut, creeping up, now I'm on ya. It goes to the break of dawn, and you just don't stop. Lyric fist fight, rubber, we don't need no blocks. It goes, I'm coming for ya. I'm in the cut, creeping up, now I'm on ya. It goes to the break of dawn, and you just don't stop. Lyric fist fight, rubber, we don't need no blocks. It goes, you come to see me rebel. Should come ready like I was Edie Raquel. I'm everlasting, never will my head expand. This publisher is clearing house like I'm Ed McMahon. I get ya, open like a bullet wound, test the repertoire. And I'll connect a right cross to your upper jaw. I'm on my toes, on my foes, beware. Tuna fish and tackle blows like I'm Rosie Grill. Yeah, forgot to tell you the response is choice. Coming to smother the brother with the monster voice. Is gonna fight slow specimen. I got the hype, so listen in. Miracle Nitro, it's a friend. We pack a punch like an earthquake session. Coming through your fucking tape deck is how we shake shit. So all you critics out there, take shelter. Or you'll be on my conveyor belt when I melt ya. I'm coming for ya. I'm in the cut, creeping up, now I'm on ya. It goes to the break of dawn, and you just don't stop. Lyric fist fight, rubber, we don't need no blocks. It goes, I'm coming for ya. I'm in the cut, creeping up, now I'm on ya. It goes to the break of dawn, and you just don't stop. Lyric fist fight, rubber, we don't need no blocks. To catch wreck. Tuna fish, the majestic. Bring your best click, we can take it to the chest quick. I get ridiculous when I get to bust. It's meticulous plus inconspicuous. Thus, just call me Luther cause I creep when you holla clone. I stick my vocal axe deep in your collarbone. I got the style that I rock your spouse. Not no mouse in this lyrical joust, you'll get housed. On the other masterpiece, the last one who trespass, got that ass deceased. Because I'm quick and original, I got the click that'll get you to a bunch of sick individuals. Don't even glance like you might be swole. And that ass deep will be my nightly soul. Got the flame to the match like an arsonist. Leaving all you sucker MCs under house arrest. It goes, I'm coming for ya. I'm in the cut, creeping up, now I'm on ya. It goes to the break of dawn, and you just don't stop. Lyric fist fight, rubber, we don't need no blocks. It goes,
and coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the December 9th, 2004 edition with special guest Ron Lau. Stay with us.
Come on and take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here is a land full of power and glory. Beauty that words cannot recall. For her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all.
from Colorado, Kansas, and the Carolinas too. Virginia and Alaska, from the old into the new. Texas and Ohio and the California shore. Tell me who could ask for more, more. Here's a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. For power shall rest on the strength of her freedom, glory shall rest on us all. Yet she's only as rich as the poorest of the poor, only as free as a padlocked prison door, only as strong as our love for this land, only as tall as we stand. For here's a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. For her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom, glory shall rest on us all. Come on and take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. For her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom, glory shall rest on us all.
And that was Phil Oakes, Power and the Glory, an early version of it. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting on the net, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. I'm going to be with you for 2 hours tonight, hoping to have in the studio shortly Scott Graham with special guest Ron Lau. We're talking about City Council shenanigans around downtown redevelopment, as well as picking up on a number of other subjects. Of course, this show specializes in civil rights for poor people and the issues of poverty and what to do in terms of guaranteeing, supporting, restoring, and establishing those rights. I'm going to introduce my guest shortly after we clear away some of the debris from the station. We kind of rushed in here, trucked in pretty quickly, and all of us were a bit late in getting together, but that's the usual here at Free Radio. If you want to join the show, you can go on the net to www.pagesincolor.org, www.pagesincolor.org. That's a chat room where, actually I'm just putting it up now, where you can sort of jump on into the conversation. You don't have to have a phone, spend any money. You, of course, have to have a computer or access to a computer, so that's a can be a limiting factor. You can also, of course, phone in. Phone line is 427-3772, 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. These shows are archived at www.huffsantacruz. That's the website for Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and you're welcome to do that as you wish, if you want. Looks like the guests have arrived. And they're shaking hands. They're squaring off. No, gentlemen, put those boxing gloves down. No, actually, they're quite friendly. Better close that door. We don't want any sneaky FCC-er types sniffing around our legal station. We are not illegal. I want you to know we would never consider broadcasting live on the air, though we understand certain piratical types are rumored to be doing just that. And, in fact, you may be hearing the show if you're on Pacific Avenue in front of the Borders Bookstore, which is where, along with Sergeant Flippo, that's really his name, Sergeant Flippo, downtown, is observing the scene in front of Borders. You might also meet the Huffsters, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, freedom advocates, or as we say, addicts, and their Cop Watch buddies. That is to say, they're individuals part of a group called Cop Watch, which is an organization that keeps an eye on the Santa Cruz Police Department. Sometimes you need more than one eye. You need two eyes, four eyes, eight eyes, many eyes as you can, actually. So often useful. I'm going to see if we actually have an operational mic. I think we do, and I want to remind you guys, you can kind of pass the mic.
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
I think you are getting out there.
It's actually working, huh?
Now, what you might do is I'm going to ask you to deal with the mic. Like, don't put it on the stand, but actually just hold it. Because
if you got enough cord here?
I don't. You might. And kind of pass it back and forth. And don't hog the mic, Scott. I know you're a vicious scoundrel in that regard.
Scott, I think that's your repertoire.
Oh, sure. Tell me another one. Scott, you're a man who's been in Santa Cruz for, what, 4 decades now? Or?
Oh, No, since the late 70s.
And you actually raised the issue of how the city was treating Ron Lau and his property, which is, of course, one of the, I guess, the two large undeveloped areas downtown, the other being what's called the Rittenhouse Hole. Is that accurate?
Yeah, basically. Those are the two properties. If you don't include the building that's next door to the Catalyst that Randall Kane hasn't done anything with since the earthquake. Although the building's still standing, it's empty. But basically, I mean, my complaint goes further than just how they're treating Ron. I think the Redevelopment Agency is an agency that is out of control. It is not responsible to the people of Santa Cruz. They don't have any oversight. There's no commission or anything that oversees what they're doing. And although the city council sits in there as the de facto heads of the redevelopment agency, the agency itself, because it's not tied to the actual general fund budget, it has its own budget, which is outside the general fund, it basically operates as a renegade agency. I mean,
and a very well-funded renegade.
Right. A case in point is there's a parking lot right next door to between Tampico and the bus station. They tore up that parking lot and replaced it with a parking lot at the tune of $750,000. And basically, the reason...
Christmas, they're trying to do something for the city.
Well, basically, their whole reasoning for doing it was that they wanted to remove the wall that was there because teenagers hung out on that wall. And
Similar to what they did at Starbucks, eliminating the wall there and putting instead some nice bushes that you could...
yeah, but I don't think it cost $750,000 to do that, although, you know, the price might have been a little extravagant for what they did.
Don't you want union jobs downtown, Scott?
I doubt very much that they had a union contractor on this job. I mean, the city always has these prevailing wage statutes, but they very seldom enforce any of them, or the local hire ordinances, or anything
Mayor
like that.
Mayor Mike Rotkin is a progressive socialist feminist. A former Mayor Scott Kennedy is a well-known Middle East peace activist. The entire council is riddled with progressives, and you're suggesting that they're not paying attention to labor rights. I'm going to have to turn the microphone over to Ron Lau refute these slanders against our progressive city council. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Robert. Actually, it's interesting that you should bring that up because I read in the document, the staff report with respect to my property, that the work on construction did not have to go through a union house, that it could be done outside of union shop. And given the size of the project, I was told that they were anticipating perhaps the largest project in town, or one of the largest projects in town, the Bolton Hill Group, that leading
your property,
leading the battle.
And again,
here,
for those who don't know, your property is the property that's next to Lulu Carpenter's. Is the site of the old Bookshop Santa Cruz Coffee Roasting Company, and I guess now there's the Asian Rose is now there, and a couple
right.
of Oswald's
right.
restaurant.
An art form.
It's near the it's right across the post office in the
yeah.
Veterans Hall.
But you would think that if it was as large a project as has been constructed in town, that it would go be a union shop.
Yeah, I mean, what progressive city and all that sort of thing. Well, Ron, let's go back. Let's talk a little bit about you, since you're the catch of the day. I mean, we Scott here suggested to give you a call, and you readily picked up on this issue because I think you have a concern about sustainable development and growth in Santa Cruz and building, right?
Oh, I'm just fascinated by all of it, by virtue of having been tied up with his property and having to kind of decide what the heck to do with it. The town is confronted by forced growth. I mean, as AMBAG, they are dictating what
AMBAG is.
AMBAG, that Monterey Bay, whatever that organization.
Monterey,
yeah.
Bay Area Governments.
Association of Monterey Bay Area Governments. Well,
right. I mean, there's that plus the university, right? And so between the two, you have a situation where growth is continuing whether you want it or not. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the situation, then that's one factor to be considered. And then, Santa Cruz is not much different from many other communities where they're pushing the environmental limits. And so then it's in that context that you want to consider what the heck should be built. And that's the fun part, of course, is to try to create some kind of an enterprise that resonates with all of the difficulties that we're confronted by. For example, you know, the Highway 1 and the issue naturally of housing and the fact that they're thinking about the rail trail idea. And then, of course, Ted Lotte has this notion of the soul train going up and down those tracks, and then
eco villages. But what is Seal Cirillo's notion? She's the head of the redevelopment agency, the redevelopment czar, so to speak. And
well,
there's been the whole redevelopment of the downtown area has been counter to what a lot of us had hoped would be. Some you actually were talking about this earlier yesterday when we spoke about you were hoping for an actual, well, not just a pedestrian mall, but an entire kind of sustainable downtown that's radically different, not just from what it is now, but from what it was
before.
No,
you're absolutely right. Yeah. We started thinking not so much the word sustainable. That was implied, but the point is I had a much smaller notion of what sustainability was back in 1989. We had already started fiddling with heliostats, and passive solar at that time was already very strong. And we were thinking in terms of just passive solar development and heliostats.
But at least having solar being a large part of the redevelopment building.
Which
it hasn't been, right?
Oh, it has not been at all, unfortunately. And I even suggested at one Vision Santa Cruz meeting that we ought to build this community that, you know, looked a little bit like Dresden at that point, that the whole thing ought to be rebuilt as Heliopolis West, mm-hmm. you know, and
instead of Carmel North.
Of course, you know, nobody could even understand what I was saying, and I just had the vaguest notion of what I even meant. But I thought, basically, I was trying to say that we should do this whole town, beginning right now, 1989, as a solar community,
bring to the focus the fact why we're really, there's a time element here, because at the last city council meeting, you showed up to express your property is really being, shall we say, being considered for lunch by the redevelopment agency, right? It's on the menu. Is that accurate? I mean, what's going on there?
Well, it's been some 15 years since the earthquake occurred. And so the city council, the redevelopment agency, and certainly Bolton Hill and Company.
Bolton Hill is a redeveloper that wants to develop your property.
Yeah, they are the ones who are pushing for the condemnation and picking up all of the cost of the city to proceed with this action. And except that staff time is to be borne by the city and not by Bolton Hill. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that they're just the redevelopment agency is impatient to move forward with, you know, my site and the Rittenhouse site. And my problems, of course, revolve around the fact that the fact that I haven't been able to find anybody to develop the thing in a sustainable design.
Fault. You are the fly in the ointment. You are the gadfly in the goose soup.
I am in part because first of all,
we should all jump on Seal Cirillo's bandwagon and say, get this Lau out of here. Let's bring in a developer. To heck with his plans. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, not quite, because I think the opportunity is just tremendous, given the fact that the redevelopment agency just commissioned in 2001, I guess, late in the year, the Roma company to come in and answer the question for them as to just where in this little enclave we could have intensive housing development. And so, you know, I mean, we're on the cusp in this town, and we could take all of these various sites that were suggested by Roma, and we could still, if not, it's not in 1989, and we can't develop solar throughout, you know, in a pervasive way throughout the whole town, but we can take these five sites that they looked at, and we can certainly do a tremendous, you know, sustainable project on each one of these sites, and it would, you know, it would push us ahead.
Five sites. That's, your site is one of them, and there are
mine
other
is one, and there are four or five others, in, all scattered down through the little downtown area.
And one of them is the Rittenhouse site. One of them is the site.
No. I don't know about the Rittenhouse site. I don't know about that, but I know that one of them, another one, is at Calvary Episcopal Church. I mean, you know, their property includes the parking lot just adjacent to the little red church there. And that's a humongous piece of property.
Then there's the Wilson property, which is being developed right now.
Yeah. Well,
what is the Wilson property, Scott?
It's the property where Free Radio was at one time, where the PedEx used to be, where Trader Tots was.
Give me a look.
You remember where
Free Radio has been in many places?
I know, but just north of the clock tower.
Ah, on North Pacific Avenue.
Yes, North Pacific. Right. Remember when Free Radio used to be there?
Free Radio certainly met there. I know, did it actually broadcast from there?
They had a little closet. It was like a little closet that ran their
age
operation.
Does strange things to you.
They
here.
Ran their operation. But anyway, that site's being developed right now. And none of the stuff that Ron's talking about as far as, you know, solar or, you know, water reduction or anything like that is being used on that site.
Well, now, aren't these costly kinds of things which are actually going to make it more expensive for the Santa Cruz, the Santa Cruz community to, I don't know, I mean, to build and then also to maintain? And also, let's put it this way, is it going to drive away developers who want, should we say, a profitable business opportunity? Are we going to, we're going to miss the chance to have the golden opportunity that we had, for example, out at what was it called? Heaven's Gate, Gateway Shopping Center, that was so nicely developed with that fine sign on Highway 1 that we all admire so much.
Well, actually, there is a little bit more cost involved in building and designing sustainably.
A little more, 10%, 50%, 80%.
Well, if you really work hard at it, you can maybe get the cost down to between 7 and 10%.
Uh-huh.
On the other hand, I have read in the literature where some projects have gone up as high as 25 and 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a matter of management, you know, and becoming familiar with the project. And I think that in all fairness, you know, when you have not done something, and I'm referring now to traditional developers who have not broached this issue in previous jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've said to you before, you know, these people have been terribly successful doing it their way in the past. And whenever you change your modus operandi, you're going to make mistakes. It's unavoidable. And so your cost factors will skyrocket, and you have to be really careful. And those fellows are so much oriented to the bottom line, you know.
Those fellows being the redevelopment agency or the developer Bolton Hill, or who are we talking
well,
about?
Well, I think people like Bolton Hill, you know, because they're in it primarily for the return on investment, and they want that to be as strong as they can have it be.
The city has given you opportunities to come forward with various plans. And here you are 15 years later still expecting the city to wait for this hole in the ground, this eyesore on our community, this disgrace. I'm kind of taking the devil's advocate point of view here. I mean, why shouldn't they eminent domain the property, you know, give you a nice piece of change and send you on your way, Ron?
Well, I think that, first of all, I've owned the property for 35 years. I mean, I came into town when the rents were 17 cents a foot. There were 23 storefronts empty in 1966. And the town was just totally devastated from a flood that occurred on the San Lorenzo in 1955. And here it was 1966, and they had brought the university into town thinking that it would help to revitalize the town, which of course it did, in not quite the manner that the old guard had anticipated. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, it did bring, among other people, into town this assistant to the chancellor named Byron Stuckey. Mm-hmm. Now, this guy served in 1966 Santa Cruz as a kind of one-man redevelopment agency. And he launched the Catalyst. And then
the
I
old
guess
Catalyst, which is
Cole
the
Catalyst,
where the St. George Hotel
yes,
is now.
Yes, and they opened up on Front Street. And then at that time, let's see, the Hip Pocket Bookshop occupied the Pacific Avenue space that fronted on Pacific. And the two enterprises were hitched up in the back end. You could go from one to the other by sliding open this little door. Mm-hmm. Well, so the thing is that I guess the Hip Pocket was having financial difficulties, and I was a salesman with Macmillan at the time, and I offered to buy the place for them at a number that I thought was reasonable, you know, and they felt that it wasn't. And subsequent to that, they went out of business, and so then the cooperative, which, you know, were a bunch of academic people, very much wanted to have a bookstore back in the location, and wrote letters to everybody I sold books to, you know, the Tides Bookshop and the cooperative in Berkeley and Thunderbird down there in Carmel Valley. Mm-hmm. And I guess the Thunderbird, Jim Smith, Corrine Smith, were the ones who considered the possibility and had arranged for the manager of their store to come up and run the new store to be opened in this location of the Hip Pocket Bookshop.
What store was it? Catalyst? Or what are we talking about? What new store replaced the Hip Pocket Bookstore?
Well, I mean, when the well, wait a minute. He's just asking for a clarification. Yes. What I'm saying is that the Hip Pocket went out of business,
right?
And so then the cooperative wanted another bookstore
right.
in the site, and so then they wrote all these letters, and
right.
the Thunderbird out of Carmel Valley
right.
was going to come in and do it.
Uh-huh.
Except that the manager that the owner at the Thunderbird had chosen decided to take off and write the All-American novel and join the Merchant Marines.
Uh-huh. Wait,
and
we have a phone call.
Okay.
The public always comes first here.
Okay.
Let's see what we got here.
Okay.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Ron, Scott, and Robert.
Hi.
Sorry about that. Hi.
This is Nancy.
Hey, Nancy. You must be the infamous Nancy. Are you Nichols these days or another Nancy?
No, I'm actually Chase.
You're Nancy Chase.
And so, I really, really applaud Ron for his foresight about sustainable building. I think it's fantastic. I know I can get a labor force together to help build Cobb or Straw Bale anytime, and I am willing to really...
Clarify for us what Cobb and Straw Bale is, Nancy.
Pardon me?
What is Cobb and Straw Bale for those who don't know?
Well, I'm sure he knows. Cobb is like Adobe, except that you don't make it into bricks.
Right.
The best thing about Cobb is that all you need is a group of people. It's like an old-fashioned barn raising. Mm-hmm. You don't really have to purchase any materials. It's dirt, sand, straw, and some water.
This sounds like some Habitat for Humanity plot.
Does it?
Yes.
I think that's very interesting.
Are you trying to drive our good lumber yards out of business here? Is that the plan?
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think sustainability is about?
Trees have a purpose to be cut down.
And maybe dirt has a purpose, too, to be built with. Look over in the Middle East. They've got cob houses that have been standing for thousands of years. It's wonderful.
Not anymore. Not with us there, I'll tell you.
Well,
we're going to whip right through them houses like... shit through a goose. Sorry, let me skip back to you. So have you been listening to the show, or are you just...
I've heard part of it. Unfortunately, I'm over the hill, and we're trying right now to pick up the station. I heard a little bit of Ron talking about it, and I just got very inspired.
Uh-huh. Well, the city council is inspired to try to, shall we say, send Ron over the hill. That's the plan, I guess, at the next city council meeting, which is Tuesday, day after, not day after tomorrow, but about 5 days down the road. I keep thinking it's Sunday, but it's actually Thursday.
Well, then why don't we have a little education campaign to the city council members where we just inform them and educate them about the wonderful qualities of straw bale and cob and any mixture of the two, because I've got lots of books and experience with that idea. So let's do it. I'm so willing to do it.
Well, the thing to do is to get as many people that want a sustainable housing and building practices in Santa Cruz to show up at this meeting.
Yeah.
And tell the city council, while they're acting as the redevelopment agency, to put the brakes on this out-of-town builder and let Ron do his thing.
Exactly.
That's actually the redevelopment agency meeting. I've tried to look on the internet, and the agenda is not yet posted, though I think it was announced this afternoon.
What's the date?
The date will be the 14th of December is when the next city council meeting is, Tuesday the 14th. Probably at 3 o'clock is the afternoon session. And then the redevelopment agency is often at 5 o'clock, but they tend to shift the time around sometimes just to make sure that the right people show up. Actually, I mean, that's a cynical view, but perhaps not so cynical. So, Nancy, while we got you on the line, Ron looks like he wants to say something, but why don't we talk about this, and then I know you're also involved with CHAM, Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, and you're also a known sympathizer with the disreputable of the earth. So I want you to be able to speak about that. But Ron,
it's all connected, Robert, because if we can build sustainable housing that's affordable, a lot of the homeless and this, you know, marginalized that you're talking about, they can build their own houses.
In Santa Cruz? I doubt it.
I don't doubt it.
Oh, okay.
I think it's coming.
Nancy.
Come on, look at the economy.
Nancy, let me just say that we're thinking sustainable, but we're not thinking in terms of cob or straw bale. I have thought about how those notions might be integrated into these designs that we're talking about. But primarily, you know, we'd probably want the city council, in response to a request from Bolton Hill, who wants to maximize the height of the structures on that site, as I myself do, have authorized that the height limit now can go up to 75 feet, which equates to 7 stories. And in this seismic area, you know, I don't think you could use those other construction methods. Those would be fine for, you know, a 1 or 2 story house. But we'd have to have, you know, reinforce this, that, and everything else in there to make it all work. But the point is, the notion is...
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I do know that there are houses in the Middle East that are many stories.
I
don't know if it's been done recently, but but anyway, I hear what you're saying.
But let me say this, though, with respect to the sustainable aspects. The architect who made the presentation on the evening of the 23rd of October to the council labeled the project, sort of labeled the idea, Zero Santa Cruz. That is that the project would use zero energy and it would use zero water. In other words, we would recycle both the water and get renewable sort of photovoltaic or passive solar or whatever other energy source possible, so that we would, you know, we would be taking a very serious step toward the sustainable dimension of the current design.
This is
possibility.
This is the proposal the city council is not considering seriously, right?
And and I should also say, you said a minute ago to take it away from this out-of-town developer. Bolton Hill is not an out-of-town developer. As a matter of fact, they make a they wish to underscore that they have had long-term relationship, 25 years in this town, and have very close relationships with the city. I have been here 35 years, of course, but, you know, I don't move in those same circles, and I never heard of Bolton Hill until they came at me with this issue. But I just wanted to make that one correction. The person that I have who is interested in developing the location with me is in fact from out of town, and he is currently in the process of putting up the first green development in San Diego.
Uh-huh.
And they
what's his name?
His name is Dr. Craig Broad, B-R-O-D,
uh-huh.
And it's anticipated at this point that when the building is completed and certified, there is a U.S. Green Building Council program
uh-huh.
that certifies buildings for their sustainable character
right.
and or their degree of sustainability. And you can either have a bronze, which is the first level, or a silver, second level, or a gold, or a platinum.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're anticipating, based on the design features that they have integrated into that structure down in San Diego, that they will probably get a gold rating.
Which uh-huh. is a top rating.
No. The platinum is a top rating. Now, the difference is that when he looked at our site down there at 1547 Pacific, he thought that there would be a bloody decent chance of getting a platinum there because we have the added benefit of transit all around us, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we have transit going down Front Street and transit going down on that Cedar Street
right.
and all that kind of stuff. So it's really quite exciting.
It is very exciting.
Think about it, Nancy. If we could have, if the ideas for this kind of building were sufficiently formulated in 1989, that
mm-hmm.
we could have done the whole bloody town,
right.
you know, in this format.
Right.
But
you're going to start somewhere. It's fantastic.
Well, that's true. That's
but
true.
Didn't in 1989 the whole idea of a green mall of the meandering garden mall was completely discarded by a combination of city council and police chief pressure
right.
that
right.
was made ramrod straight. They
right.
tore out all the bushes.
Right.
They uprooted the trees. They put
yeah.
in the Christmas lights
right.
and all this crap. So I mean, what we've got now. Is we've got a sort of a modified Carmel North, is what it you know, looks like.
Yeah.
And Carmel is more quaint, yes. It hasn't got any stoplights.
Yeah. From my point of view, of course, that was unfortunate, and I was castigated for not having...
But you actually were a part of the whole process of saving the Bookshop Santa Cruz, setting up the first tents for the bookshop, though I was concerned that tents were set up for books and not for homeless people. But we'll get into that later.
Well, yeah, that was quite exciting there. I mean, I had lots of money at that point because the insurance people came in, and so we were able to do all that.
Uh-huh.
And that was tremendous fun, and that was done sis boom bah. You know, they want me to build this building now, sis boom ba, but right now it's a different story because I don't have really the kind of money that I had back then.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, of course, you know, because I don't have the money, I'm having to go to developers and try to work out something, and that's very ticklish because the terms that I want are rather stringent on the one hand, and then secondly, the notion of building green for them is a novelty, and they're reluctant to do it.
Uh-huh.
So,
Nancy, let me interrupt you, Ron, because I got to get a couple things in here. We are, of course, tuned to Free Radio on the net, www.freakradio.org, and rumor has it we're also going out over 101.1 FM. In the studio, Ron Lau, Scott Graham, and I'm Robert Norse. On the phone, it's Nancy Chase. Nancy, any quick updates for homeless civil rights struggles or social service struggles in San Jose? I know that you have recently uprooted yourself and are now notoriously wandering around in a car and without a known residence, you know, between here and Oregon. I guess you're off to Oregon for the next week.
Yes, I am.
And you were seen, spotted at a Huff meeting yesterday, associating with certain undesirables.
Uh-huh.
You actually went to McDonald's to confer with the McDonald's on Ocean Street, who apparently evicted, or two homeless people said they've been evicted into the rain at 6 o'clock in the morning at McDonald's
uh-huh.
yesterday morning.
There's a lot going on in Santa Cruz, you're right.
So what's any updates that we should know about from San Jose, or any reactions to anything you've seen? I mean, give us a reading here.
Okay, just very briefly. I guess I'm basing what I'm doing on my spiritual belief that what you do unto the least of these, you do unto me. And there's a lot of people who have been marginalized by our society, and so yes, the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry has been dealing with the homeless situation for 10 or 15 years, and I really thought it would go away, but it's not, and I think it's taken a lot of patience to make the changes that we have to make. And in San Jose right now, they're building a huge city hall right next to the church, which is housing 40 homeless families, and it's pretty difficult to watch the amount of money being poured into that building compared to the no money being poured into the...
Scott Graham suggested that maybe some, dare I say it, cost overruns on the city hall there.
Say it again?
Cost overruns, meaning they say they're gonna, it's going to cost $6 million and ends up costing $12 million. We had that problem with the new police station here in Santa Cruz. It was about almost twice as much as it was supposed to be.
I think San Jose was $70 million and it turned into $130 million.
Right.
And this is right next to the church, which which CHAM has been sometimes in defiance of city regulations and pressure, letting homeless families live in. Right?
Yeah, we've been there. Yeah, we've been there for about 5 years, and basically, because there is no other place available for these families, there's not too much that the city can do because the public will rally back around us and say you can't put families on the street when you're not offering them any alternative. And just like Santa Cruz, you know, there's not enough beds or places for the homeless people to be sleeping. So how can they possibly say, sorry, you have to go back and sleep outside? And these are families. These are kids. I think there's about 30 kids right now in the church.
Well, that's the question we're going to ask Mayor Rotkin tomorrow during Human Rights Day. I don't know if you know, tomorrow Human Rights Day. There's going to be the mayor of Santa Cruz, Mayor Mike Rotkin, and the mayor of the other three cities surrounding Watsonville, Capitol, and Scotts Valley are all going to be gathering at the county building outside the courts to celebrate the human rights that we all enjoy so freely here in Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh.
For homeless people,
right.
Of course, that's the right to get arrested after 11 o'clock at night if you're sleeping, the right to be ticketed if you're wrapping up with a blanket after 11 o'clock, the right to be dragged into court or told to move along, having your tent slashed and torn down if you are putting up a tent against the elements, all illegal under Mike Rotkin's camping ordinance. And we're going to be talking about that at noon tomorrow. Rotkin will have his press conference. We're going to have a press conference at 11:30, an hour before, talking about the issue. And I guess some of us are going to go to McDonald's to follow up on the inquiry you made. You kind of went to McDonald's and talked to the manager to find out what are these grubby homeless guys lying? Were they actually thrown out into the rain, or are they just belly aching because they couldn't drink their booze with the hamburgers or whatever?
No, they. I think it was a situation where the manager at McDonald's is feeling like he doesn't want. He's basically discriminating because he's feeling like he doesn't want homeless people to be there, and he's making choices according to what he feels comfortable with. And if somebody doesn't smell good or takes too long to drink their coffee, then he feels free to ask them to leave.
And there is a sign saying you got
30 minutes. The sign says 30 minutes, no loitering. You have 30 minutes to finish your meal. And when I asked him directly, that means if you buy one cup of coffee, you stay for half an hour. If you buy another one, you can stay another half an hour. But after that, you're out of there. But he freely told us that he does not enforce that unless he feels like he doesn't want the person there. I mean, it's like... It's selectively enforced, Robert.
It's kind of like the downtown ordinances indoors. It's kind of maybe that's where Ed Porter and Emily Riley got their idea for the move-along law. Every 30 minutes you get to move. Actually, it's every hour you get to move along on Pacific Avenue. So our outdoor regulations are a little more liberal than McDonald's. I guess we can pat ourselves on the back.
Yeah.
You don't have to buy anything.
Well,
and
with the affluence that exists in this country, there's no reason anybody should be sleeping outdoors. And I'm sticking to that one. And I'm willing to just keep pushing and talking to people until we get some changes made. So that's what the McDonald's encounter was for me, is just finding out what their policy is and why, and seeing if we can educate them.
And for those who are interested, you can show up at McDonald's tomorrow at 9. A Huff Truth Squad is going to be sampling the burgers, or maybe just sampling the water. I'm not sure what we're going to sample over there. We're going to wander over to McDonald's and check out them golden arches. And then we're going to, at 11:30, we'll be in front of City Hall with some hot food, hopefully, if Joe Schultz has a mind to help us, and possibly he will. Giving a press conference about we've been having some legal victories, and I'm going to talk about that in a moment, too.
Okay.
But, Nancy, anything else you want to say before I'll stop my filibuster long enough for you to have a word or two here?
Yeah. No, I thank you for letting me interact with Ron, and I'm really interested in finding out more about the project. And
Ron, let me ask.
It all goes together.
Is there a number that people listening to this show can get in touch with you at? I mean, if you want, you can have people call the Huffman number, and I can pass on their phone numbers to you, or if you have a number you want to give out, whatever you'd like, how would you like to do that?
Well, that's fine to get through to you, and then you...
Okay, if anybody wants to contact Ron Lau, talk about sustainable development, or support him in his attempt to develop his own property rather than have the homegrown but perhaps not so sustainable and green-oriented Bolton Hill developers develop the property as envisaged by our great by Empress Cecile Cirillo of the Redevelopment Agency, give a call to 423.
King Dick.
Ah, yes, Dick Wilson, the city manager, the true king in our town, King Dick. 423-HUFF is the number, 423-4833. It's a voicemail. Leave a message. Leave your number. I'll pass it on to Ron Lau. Nancy, thank you. Anything else?
Thank you. No. Let's take care of each other. How about that?
Sounds good.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Now, I've got a couple announcements to make. We are closing on 15 to 7.
That black poster there, you got to announce that.
And I'm getting some assistance from my chief associate, Scott Graham, here. But actually, I've got a couple of announcements to make about what's happening tonight. There are two meetings tonight which people interested in homeless civil rights might be interested in going to. One of them is a little bit obscure. It's a meeting at the police station, of all things, of the Downtown Neighbors, meeting with UCSC staff people around the issue of growth in the neighborhoods. And is the university eating up the community? That's something. That's 7 o'clock at the community room of the police station. And we have a call. Another announcement in just a moment. Callers always come first. Hi, you're on Free Radio with the Mary 3 here.
Hello? Hi, Robert.
Yes.
Robert, this is Ray. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Very good, thanks.
And you know, Ron, I was thinking about your story there, you know, and I work, like, just on Center Street myself. I can see that property from my window. And, you know, I got to tell you, you know, I don't know. My family are longtime Santa Cruz residents, and back in the 50s and through the 60s, they had a fruit stand that was a prominent fruit stand out in Aptos by the highway. And then when they came in and they wanted to move the big, put the big overpass there, well, you know, eminent domain. And bye-bye went the fruit stand. And also, I thought about, you know, I can't think of his name, but what was that eccentric who used to live out by the railroad tracks where the city claimed eminent domain and the sheriff came there with the deputy and he shot the sheriff dead, wounded the deputy, and he was also killed in the exchange? You know, I know that that doesn't probably sound like what you want to hear, but, I mean, I don't know. The city plays tricks. They don't play fair. And, you know, you can bet that the Freemasons fixed probably in, you know, all up and down on all of those properties. I mean, you know, I'm going to a meeting tonight with the Downtown Neighborhood Association. Robert, you know what this is all about. And, you know, you
actually,
probably saw the picture or the article in the Sentinel this morning.
Yeah, actually, I was talking about another Downtown Neighbors meeting at the police station, but you're going to one that's right across from the Union Cafe at the Georgiana Kirby School. Is that where it is? 117
right,
Union
right,
Street?
Right, right, right.
Tell us about that. You were at the last one. What's coming up this week at 7:30 or 7 o'clock?
Well, it's at 7 o'clock, so I got to leave out of here pretty quick.
Right.
But, you know, just suffice it to say that, you know, there's lots of people in this area who are, like, really working hard on the gentrification. And, you know, they're wanting to roll out anything that's undesirable. They're wanting to build everything up. They're wanting to turn it into the next Carmel, just like you said. And there's a very big, heavy presence with these people, and it'd be really interesting to hear what they have to say tonight. But I'm sure it's going to be pretty much what it said in the paper, that there's going to be more cops around, more probably hassles on, you know, just the regular good folks not doing anything wrong, as well as on, you know, other people doing whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah, I see actually here, Ron wants to say something. Go ahead,
Ron. Ray, let me just say something about that flower stand that you mentioned.
No, it was a fruit and vegetable stand.
I mean, excuse me, fruit and vegetable stand. The point is, at least in that situation, the condemnation was for a public use of the property. In my situation, it's for private profit. See, now there's a big difference there. And, I mean, if they were coming in and taking over my piece of property there and going to put a freeway or some public enterprise there, that would be one thing, you know. But to take it and give it to somebody else to do exactly what I would do myself and do it in a manner that that really towers over what their plans sort of suggest, you know, that's a whole nother ball of wax.
It's a fish of a different color, you might say.
Well, Ron, I'll just leave it to say this. I mean, I totally understand what you said, and I can appreciate that you should be able to do anything you want to with that property, even if you just want to, like, you know, have a park.
Sit on it.
But, yeah,
or sleep
absolutely.
On it.
Bury yourself there. I think it's, you know, it's up to you. But the government and, you know, like I said, I think the Freemason fix is in. I'm thinking about that old eccentric guy, and I tell you what, I think it's time to go and oil up your 44.
Whip out your...
And I wish you all the best of luck. I'll see you where I see you.
Great.
Thanks, Ray. Bye-bye. And actually, I have here the Santa Cruz Sentinel of December 8th, and it's on the front page. Santa Cruz neighbors tackle crime. Urine and human feces on the porch, broken windows, empty beer bottles, burglaries, drug deals in broad daylight, graffiti and vandalism, tattered rose bushes. Photographer Willis Campbell has had enough. For the 28 years his studio has been located in a quaint Victorian house on the corner of Union and Cedar Streets, he says, no time has been worse for crime and the nuisance of transients. Aha, the menace of transients. Then now, the drug deals go on right here, Campbell said Tuesday, pointing to the sidewalk and public parking lot access from his business. Police don't do anything about it. We feel like hostages in our own town. Next door to Campbell's business on Union Street is the private Georgiana Bruce Kirby School. And at 7 o'clock, as Ray mentioned, this meeting, and it's a public meeting, begins. And who knows, maybe we can even induce Scott Graham to sneak in and sniff around. You never can tell. Or he may be lurking around the police station. He's a questionable individual. Anyway, there obviously seems to be concern about crime, vagrancy, burglaries. What else is mentioned in this article? Take back their turf, restore safety to the area, vent frustrations, preserve neighborhood, preserve the quality of life, all overseen by Santa Cruz police officer Jim Howes and Cynthia Matthews, city councilwoman, near the office of William Christie, the coroner dentist and former John Dine gets shot by police. Oh, well, head of the Citizens Police rah-rah board. Scott, any comments about this this vigilante group that's meeting tonight?
Well, I was really sure that these new downtown parking regulations would have taken care of all this. You know, I mean, that was part of their reasoning behind this, even though it didn't really get mentioned in public much. They were saying it was mostly college students parking in the neighborhoods, but a lot of it had to do with homeless people parking in the neighborhoods, especially overnight parking. And, you know, now that there's only two-hour parking in these neighborhood streets in the downtown area, I would think that would take care of everything, you know? I mean, come on. What more do we need to do other than control the parking?
Well, we've gotten rid of the upwardly mobile the homeless on wheels. Now we have to get rid of the homeless on shoes, the ones who wander around with their tarps and their dirty tents and their scruffy sleeping bags and their bindle stiffs, all that stuff. So, I mean, this is an attempt, I think, like dealing with the Ron Lau problem of the large hole in the ground and the irascible Lau who just can't seem to get his shit together after 15 years, so he has to be shoved along. If we shove the transients along as well, perhaps we can actually establish a neighborhood we can all be proud of. Ron, what do you think?
Well, I'm not sure what I think, but I'm definitely being encouraged to do something. And, of course, I know exactly what I want to do, in my case anyway. And I have right now the arrangements set to do exactly what we'd like to do. Or not exactly what I would do, because, I mean, from my point of view, the only difficulty with the people I'm talking to...
But you have the financial backing to do
it. Yeah, have the financial backing. But, you know, again, you run up against the fact that I'm willing or interested in going much further, even than this green developer that I have, who is, you know, got this building that's slated to come in at a gold certification level with the U.S. Green Building Council. But I think that, nevertheless, you know, I'm being pushed along here.
Well,
and
is it simply a question if they're pushing you along? Let me ask you, Scott Graham, do you think the city council intends to oust this guy, seize the property, and do what it wants, or are they just kind of nudging Ron along? What's your feeling?
Well, I have the feeling that basically they've already made up their minds that they want this other project, and basically they're going to make Ron bend over and take it. And if he puts up a fight, you know, it might turn into a little bloody altercation, and hopefully he could win if it turns into a fight. But, I mean, he's going to have to come in with a rock-solid plan, and not only with these plans, but also with enough people in the community willing to back his play to say, yeah, we want something different downtown. We don't want the old, same old brick-and-mortar building going up. We want a different kind of thing. Santa Cruz is a different kind of town. People think differently here. Let's have a building that reflects those different intentions in life.
But in four days, I mean, in 5 days, the city council is meeting in 5 days. What's the timetable here? How quickly, when is the window of opportunity going to close here?
Well, I think that I'm not sure that you're right about them taking an action next week on the 14th or whatever that is.
Yeah.
It's my understanding that I went over to the redevelopment agency and they've advised that basically Mr. Schwartz of Bolton Hill is required to make me an offer and try to take the project over from me voluntarily, to purchase the site. And if that effort fails, then the city is supposedly to ask me to sell to the city. And then if that effort fails, as I anticipate they will, because I'm not interested in selling, then they will condemn the property and go to court. And then, of course, is when my side of the fence, my attorneys can get involved with the project, with the case.
What's the time frame on that? When is that likely?
Well, I think that's slated to all get, it will not go beyond the mid-May date.
Right. So are you saying that we don't have to worry about rushing to the next city council?
Well, I wasn't aware that there was a specific action.
Yeah.
You know, and if there is, of course, then there. But I'm not aware of anything. And, of course, I haven't been aware of many things. So for example, I only found out that this Bolton Hill issue of proceeding with a condemnation, I only found out, I think, on the 21st of October when somebody walked in the front door of the planning office and pasted up on the door were all these notices that the city was doing this and this and this and that with respect to my property, and I hadn't been advised, and I should have been advised, you know, it seems to me. And so now, now I've got it. I've asked them to be sure to send documents whenever the staff does something like that.
And
to,
we know that
to my attorneys.
Cirilla will certainly do that and follow your every wish in that matter, as she does with everyone else in the public that has an interest of that sort. Actually, we're going to invite Cecil Cirilla to come on the show. Don't hold your breath, along with Dick Wilson as guests at our next show, to see if the two of them can, shall we say, give the other side of the story, the city's side of the story. I'm asking my producer to rush to the phone right now and leave a message for Uncle Dick Wilson and Mama Cecil, so to speak. So I don't expect this necessarily going to come on the air, and I am speaking somewhat facetiously, but I also think they should be given an opportunity to speak their side. Scott, what's your sense about this? Do you have any? When was the last time a piece of property was eminent domain in Santa Cruz, and what was that all about? Do you remember?
Well, I'm not sure.
Eminent domain, by the way, means they offer you a price, 10% above the market, and they take your property, whether you like it or not, for public use, right?
Well,
pay you for it.
That's what it's supposed to be. They're supposed to actually give you more than it's worth because they're taking it from you. But normally they lowball what, you know, they have somebody come in and estimate the worth of the property and lowball it and then give you 10%, and it actually ends up being less than what the real market value is.
And of course, Ron has pointed out that his property is not being taken for public use, but for private development.
Right.
But isn't eminent domain supposed to be for public use?
No. Well, no, not under redevelopment law. Now, if the city was to do it outside the redevelopment zone, they would have to do it for public good. It's like they gave the Metro bus service eminent domain powers within the city when they were trying to build Metro Base, because that way they could, the Metro could go in eminent domain any property that they thought they needed to build Metro Base. As it is, they basically are just going to expand in their current area. They took out a rental, A to Z rentals, and are going to expand down there next to the old tannery. But, you know, so that would have been a public use. And that's the only way they can eminent domain outside of a redevelopment area. But within a redevelopment area, they can do it for what they call assembling property. Mm-hmm. And then they can resell it to a developer. And see, what they would be assembling property for there would be to add Ron's property to the parking lot that they own out back and make it one parcel. And under redevelopment law, they can do that. Now, whether or not this is just or not is, you know, anybody's guess. And, you know, the public should have a say in it.
When's the last time it was done that you remember?
Well, I think it was done, you know, when they built the levees. There was eminent domain things happening then. And,
what about Gateway? Didn't they eminent domain Gateway?
Yeah, they eminent domain some property there. There was some people that were unwilling to sell. But they expanded the redevelopment zone to include. See, originally it was just downtown. And then they made this expanded redevelopment zone that included River Street all the way out to Harvey West Park. They call it the included area of the downtown redevelopment zone. And then they also, in the whole Beach South Laurel thing, then they included the whole Beach Flats and that area as part
of... Like a growing cancer.
Yes, basically it is. And, you know, so it gives them extraordinary powers.
It's being done to beautify our community.
Which a normal government agency doesn't have, because a normal government agency has to do it for a public benefit. It can't be to then turn it over to a private developer and have it be a private enterprise.
How did this begin, Scott? What was the original reason the redevelopment agency was set up?
Well, originally it was set up to deal with a flood that happened in 55.
Uh-huh.
And they formed the redevelopment agency then and to build the levees. And when that was over, basically the redevelopment went into hiding, dug a hole in the mud and only came back out when the earthquake happened. And since the earthquake, the redevelopment agency has become this monster that is just, you know, because part of what the redevelopment agency does is it incurs debt. And it pays off that debt by what they call the tax increment.
This is sort of like the Bush administration.
Yes, but there's this thing, it's called the tax increment, and that's where a property, the value of the property before redevelopment and the value of the property after redevelopment, the difference is the tax increment. You know, like if a property is worth, say, $1 million before redevelopment, then after they redevelop the property, it's worth $2 million. The difference in the property tax all goes to the redevelopment agency. It doesn't go to the state. It doesn't go to the county. It doesn't go to the schools. It all goes to the redevelopment agency. And then the redevelopment agency pays off its debt. So that's why they do these foolhardy things like spend $750,000 turning a parking lot into a parking lot.
A better parking lot. A more Christmassy parking.
Because they have to incur debt to keep themselves rolling. And so they come up with these harebrained schemes to just, like, justify their own existence. Like all these alley beautification projects, which, you know, if somebody was to do some of these alley beautification projects on their own, it may end up costing them, you know, anywhere from $50,000 to $70,000, but it costs the redevelopment agency millions to do it. And it's just insane the amount of money they spend to do things that should not cost that much money.
Well, luckily we have a new progressive city council which will take this all in hand. Let's bring it back to that. You have a new city council, Ron. Has Tony Madrigal or Ryan Coonerty or even some of the old-time progressive pals of yours, because you're a progressive, you're all progressives, Emily Riley, the progressive baker, Ed Porter, the progressive high school teacher, Tim Fitzmaurice, the green as the grass progressive city council member, surely they're going to give, you know, they're interested in sustainable green development downtown, right?
Well, I suspect that, in fact, they are. And except that for whatever reason.
Naive alert. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Nevertheless, I guess from their point of view, they are disappointed that something has not yet happened. And, of course, from my point of view, you know, I've got the Dream Project online right now and presented it to them on the 23rd.
Well, what's the concern? Why? I mean, you presented it to them, but you've gotten no indication from them that they're going to be supportive of it, right?
No, it's just in fact the opposite. They voted against it. Every one of the members of the council voted against me, I think, more than the project. I think
they
don't
like
loved
your hairstyle. Your ethnicity, perhaps. It's your Native American features.
Well, I mean, did you ever think of having like maybe George Owl come in and present your plan for you?
I'm sure that he would get it right through. There's no two ways about that.
George Owl, for those who don't know, is.
But the
George Owl is who?
George Owl.
Yeah, for those who don't know.
Oh, well, he, what? He's a local developer. He's done extremely well.
Much favored by the Santa Cruz City Council.
I suppose,
but
yeah.
Not a particularly green developer.
No. I don't think that he's... Well, he's right very much along with Bolton Hill. I think he's one of the participants with them. And the Bolton Hill project is not at all green. In particular, the thing that I'm concerned about with the Bolton Hill project is that they want to take all of the area that's currently courtyard. I think they only want about a 60-foot depth from Pacific Avenue for retail space. And then everything from that point back to Cedar Street, you know, the distance between Pacific and Cedar is 312 feet. And so the difference between 60 and 312 would be devoted to surface parking.
Of course,
and that would destroy the whole, you know, idea of the courtyard that I get a big kick out of.
You're such a funny buddy. You know, we need more vehicles downtown. That's what I've always said. What about has there ever been a green project downtown? Has the city council ever approved a green project in the last 20 years?
I don't think there has been one yet. But they are no less aware of the impact of green and the necessity for green. It's just that. You know, they don't
give a shit?
Well,
the only thing that may be, vaguely considered a green project in the downtown area was when they raised the levees, the city council actually had them plant all these trees and all that kind of stuff along the levee, which wasn't allowed the first time the levee was built. The Army Corps of Engineers believed that the trees would actually tear the levee, the root systems of the trees would tear the levees apart. And after many levee failures down through the last 30 years throughout the country, they found out the levees that had trees on them actually held together better than levees with no trees. So, you know, that could be vaguely considered a green project by planting trees on the levee. But, you know, other than that, I don't think so, you know. And personally, I really liked Ron's first project he came to the city council with, which was a hotel downtown.
Oh, yeah.
Because, right now there is no downtown hotel.
Yeah.
And I really thought that was a great idea. And I don't understand why the city rejected it.
Oh, the city, it's not the city that rejected it. They loved it. But it was, I had the same difficulty with the people who wanted to develop it that I've had with every other developer. And, you know, I noticed that we've been through about 8 major development firms. And so...
We being you and this property or the
me
city?
And the property. Me and the property.
Uh-huh.
And they all have been very strong traditional developers.
And the problem is that they'll originally agree with you. They'll say it's
oh,
fine.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
later on when you try to actually hold their feet to the fire, they'll
right.
say, nope, they'll say, we're not going to do it. And they figure you've gone deep enough that you have to go along with them. But
right.
you say, heck with that. I'm wild and crazy. Get lost.
Yeah, right. Well, more or less. That's been a great – that has been a difficulty with me. But nevertheless,
a difficulty
to get
with
back
– or a strength? With you.
Well, anyway, let me comment on Mr. Graham's idea about the hotel. I think everybody loved it, myself included. I thought it was
the
idea was just to do a hotel on the site and
next to Little Carpenters.
Yeah, uh-huh. and we just never got it off the ground. I mean, the city council loved it, and then so we went back and was gonna. Go along with the whole deal, and then they change the terms. Now, that may be routine.
They being the developers.
Yeah, that may be routine in the business, but, you know, I'm new to the business, and I'm not accustomed to that.
What year was this?
I think it was just around, 1989 to 1999, right in there.
10-year
period. Wait a minute. No, this was 1998.
98.
Turn around.
98, 99. Well, I have a question here that my producer has rolled in with. What about the Louis Rittenhouse Family Memorial Hole at Church and Pacific Avenue? are they pressuring Mr. Rittenhouse the same way, or are they allowing him a sort of a blank check to keep his holy hole there holy for them?
Well, I suspect that they're pressuring him as well. But our positions are different in the community. He's been here much longer than I have.
He's
and
certainly
he's
a little whiter than you as well.
Well,
let's not get into race politics here. Play the race card, of course.
You know, no. I mean, it's just that. I don't know. You know, maybe his project doesn't lend itself to residential, or for whatever the reasons, the Bolton Hill people like my site.
What is his project anyway?
Well, I think his project is sort of where he'd like to be, where I am at, believe it or not. In other words, as I read it in the newspaper,
by the way, Rittenhouse's hole is right across from the. I guess it's now this Gelato Mania. It used to be the Cooper House area. It's on the corner of Pacific and what's the cross
Church.
And Church Street.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And anyway, he's only waiting for tenants before he builds. In other words, he doesn't want to proceed with construction and then not be able to rent the space afterwards. And I'm in my case, I have my property all sort of ready to go from that standpoint. In other words, I have the tenant. You know, the developer that
you
wants
just have
to come
the city
in.
Council ready
it's
to
just
take
that
it
the
away
city
from
council yeah, doesn't right. want to allow me to proceed.
Well, how can the community, should we say, coax the city council to allow you to proceed with your plan? I mean, is there any way that we can get this gang of 7 to, should we say, back off? Scott, what's your view on this? Will People Power do something, or possibly CalPERG, or maybe WILF would step into the breach?
Well, I mean, I think that there's also, I mean, maybe even the Green Party, you know, if we're talking
the
green development.
Green Party.
Yeah, I mean, Louis LaFortune might step up to the plate here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's going to take something like that to get the city to back off of Ron and give him a little bit more time to, like, really get these plans all together, present them to the city with, you know, a whole financial prospectus and all that kind of stuff so they can say, okay, Ron's really going to do it this time. Let's let him do it, you know.
Well, this is the first time we've had a green developer. You know, all of the others, the reason they fell apart was that they would commit in sort of an ambivalent way to the notion of green and all this and that kind of stuff. But when it got right down to it, you know, between my tough terms and the green requirements, they weren't too anxious to do it. Whereas Dr. Broad has jumped right into this this notion of sustainability and has made a very great study of it and is willing to proceed and has got the financial backing to do it because the people behind him won't develop anything but green. You know, it's just the antithesis of what's going on, and it's simply because we're at a transition point. You know, and the new ideas are coming on hot and heavy, and the old guard is still sort of reluctant to proceed.
Now, this show, you're listening, by the way, to Free Radio's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Speaking just a moment ago was Ron Lau. Before that, Scott Graham. I'm Robert Norse, and it's at www.freakradio.org. Or, for the criminals among us, I understand 101.1 FM may or may not be carrying this. I have no idea. Don't look at me. If you're down on Pacific Avenue, you may be listening to the show from the Copwatch or Huff table. And if any Huffsters down there are wondering why the hell we're spending so much time on developments that seem to have diddly squat to do with poor people, because I'm not aware that any of this stuff is going to create any more housing for poor people than any of the other developers, well, maybe we should ask these two great champions of the poor just why the hell people who are concerned with civil rights for poor people should even be interested in this issue. Scott Graham?
Well, one of the things that's going to happen, no matter what gets developed on this site, is that we're back to the tax increment and the redevelopment funds, right? Well, when this site gets built up, no matter who does it, whether Ron does it or Bolton Hill does it or Barry Swenson does it, it'll be reassessed at a new rate. And that new tax rate, everything above and beyond what the old tax rate was, will all go to the redevelopment agency. Under state law, 20% of that tax increment is supposed to be spent on low-income housing. That was one of the things that pushed them so hard to build the Dolphin Lee project, because they were running up against this wall where if they don't spend their housing money within a timely manner, then it reverts to the county. If the county doesn't spend it in a timely manner, then it reverts to the state. So they had to rush ahead and build a bad project.
That's the Nueva Vista Dolphin Lee project.
Right. They had to rush full speed ahead with this project and not listen to anybody's concerns because they were on a timetable.
Now, wait a minute. This is what Mayor Sugar told you in the confidence of his...
No, this was a reality. They were under a deadline to start spending this redevelopment housing
this
money.
This is the Scott Graham analysis.
No, this was they brought this up in meetings. You know, Cecile Cirillo herself said that openly in meetings, that if they didn't start spending this redevelopment money on low-income housing, it would revert to the county.
By the way, another question from the producer is, do you think the redevelopment agency has outlived its usefulness in recovering from the earthquake and is now doing make-work projects to justify their own salaries?
Yeah, I believe so. I think that, you know, basically, you know, like that parking lot I pointed out shows that they are just doing things to justify their existence. You know, I mean, see, in reality, I mean, the east side, the Soquel and Water Street, the east side business part district is also part of the redevelopment zone, but they don't spend a dime out there. Although that part of town generates more taxes than all of downtown.
Really?
Well, it's mostly because of the car lots out there. The two car lots out there generate so much sales tax that they actually generate more sales tax revenue for the city than all of downtown.
Perhaps, you know, we could replace Borders with a car lot. Would that work? I mean, we were always talking, Scott Kennedy was always praising these schemes, and Rotkin as well, that you need to have something that will generate tax revenues, even though it might seem to be regressive in some ways.
Well, that's where, that's another virtue of the hotel that you were talking about.
Right, tax revenue.
Yeah, it has that occupancy tax. And from my private point of view, of course, the hotel is still very much a possibility.
Wait a minute. The hotel, but if you're going to be building, your plan is to build what right now?
Essentially, the market is for residential.
So you're planning to build what? What's going to be on the first floor?
Well, the first floor would be
retail
all the way back to Cedar and, you know, all the way back.
We're not talking about community organizations. We're talking about little gift shops and glitzy $1,000 shoe stores and things like that.
Well, maybe some of that, but essentially what I want is to try to have the kind of resonance with the community that we had in the old days in the 1970s and 80s.
The community has changed.
Well, that's true. And so we would have some of that, but I think that's why I'm so intent on the sustainable green approach, because I think that is one way to recapture some of that resonance with the local community, but also to have that ground level to definitely be pedestrian friendly.
You're not interested in turning your place into a plaza by any chance, are you?
A plaza.
Remember, there's a discussion of the downtown plaza. People have been talking about eminent domaining Rittenhouse's property and turning it into a plaza.
A plaza in a sense may be that there would be a lot of open space, and it would be surrounded by a lot of little tiny shops or eating houses or coffee shops and that kind of stuff, you know, that would be friendly to tourism and local community,
but that's not
and music and that kind of stuff.
But that's not your plan. That's not the plan you're presenting the city council with as an alternative to their seizing your property.
Well, I mean, this is a plan I would like the developers to come up with, and they have.
What is the plan you would like?
They have gone along with the whole notion of pedestrian access, pedestrian friendly first ground level space.
Right, but we're not talking about a pedestrian plaza, right? I mean, there's a difference between a plaza and a building, right? I mean,
You're talking about the difference between a park and a retail area that has open space. You know, he's talking about a retail area that has open space, if people that were here before the earthquake can remember what Cafe Pergolesi and the bookshop and that whole area, you know, you had the Penny University that used to meet there and all sorts of other groups and, you know, it was basically a community hub. People would always say, oh, we'll meet you behind the bookshop, we'll meet you at Pergolesi's, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that was the community hub right there.
And that's what you're talking about, Ron?
Well, you've rightfully pointed out that the times have changed, okay?
A tattoo parlor.
But nevertheless, that's the idea. And my own, I would just repeat that that's where I think there are two reasons. In other words, I think the sustainable issue is fundamental to this whole next millennium that we're headed into. Okay, number one. And number two, I think many, many people in Santa Cruz fully appreciate that position. And so we would generate support if we were to do it in this manner. And that's the...
By the way, for those who are interested in emailing the city manager, I do have an email address for him. It's citymgr, one word, @ci.santa-cruz.ca.us. Again, citymgr. CITYMGR @ci.santa-cruz.ca.us. And his phone number is 420-5010. So you might want to call the real power in the city, that's Uncle Dick Wilson, and ask Dick to back off on Ron, at least until the green situation is considered. Scott?
Well, you know, he's also known as Biggest Dickus.
Biggest Dickus, my goodness. Getting a little risque here. To be fair, people criticize, there was talk about eminent domaining Rittenhouse's property for a plaza, because, I mean, that never really went very far. And, there, you know, Catherine Byers winced and minced and said she couldn't do it without a fifth vote or some nonsense, which may well have been true. But they didn't even try it, as I could see. Why not? Why shouldn't we ask, say to Ron, you know, you're proposing these green developments for retail. Why shouldn't the community be more concerned about open space there? Why not insist that you or the city put in a plaza there?
Well, I mean, to me, the real issue of a plaza doesn't necessitate taking anybody's commercial property. If we want a plaza downtown, the thing to do is get rid of the cars on Pacific Avenue. You know, like, they could do it the same way it's done in Boulder. You still have cross streets, but every block is a plaza unto itself. And it would make downtown a lot more pleasurable. I think that it would actually increase the shoppability of downtown. And the other thing that, you know, I've pointed out many times when the business community has come to city council meetings to complain about one thing or another or ask the city for something, why not keep your shops open until 9 o'clock? Most people work, you know, families or whatever, you know, most couples, both people work. And if you work, you don't get home until after 6. Most of the downtown shops close at 6 o'clock, so how do they expect people to shop there? If they stayed open until 9, they would do a lot more business. Capitola Mall is much busier in the evening than it is during the day.
I'm looking for the redevelopment agency online, and for some reason I cannot find it. I find the city manager, the city clerk, the city council.
Seal is hiding.
I don't know what to say. Seal, come out wherever you are. Ron? You
I just wanted to underscore that idea of creating your plazas in between cross streets. That, for me, is a new idea that I've finally come around to accept. I've had for years people tell me that the mall ought to be without cars, you know, free of cars. And frankly, that idea has frightened me, just as the green idea frightens traditional developers. You know what? So the point is that, however, you know, it's obvious that the car is the focus of our greatest environmental problem, because it is the reason for sprawl. It enables us to zone our single-family dwellings as we do and let them go all the way out to Gonzales and take over all the fields of Watsonville and Salinas and then go drive 100 miles to go to work. See, and so that is a central issue, and we in Santa Cruz ought to really take the lead and start to reverse that position with respect to the car. Now, I, for one, for example, love the car. You know, I no problem, just jump in and drive right the heck up to the city.
We should say right now, Scott Graham is a mechanic and a notorious protector and healer of sick vehicles. Isn't that true, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I work on cars. I also work on houses.
You perpetuate the car problem, don't you,
well,
Scott Green?
I mean, I do tune-ups on cars. So, I mean, if a car is not tuned up properly, it spews a hell of a lot more pollution than if it's tuned properly.
Can we say rationalization alert?
Well, Robert, when's the last time you walked from your house downtown to watch a movie?
I will say no more.
That's an interesting point. When's the last time you walked? Because I have been walking and have now lived for about 2 weeks this notion of an eco-city. The whole idea of these eco-cities is that you really sort of have your access via pedestrian and via proximity, you know. I guess the idea of access via or by proximity. So you don't need a car to go to work. You know, you might live up on the 10th story and ride the elevator down five stories.
Are there any such cities currently in existence?
They're beginning to I don't think there are any such cities just like that now, but they're definitely, Vancouver is moving very, very aggressively in that direction. Okay. And the point is to try to reduce the role of the automobile and dependency on the automobile in our lives so that we can maybe retrieve some of that, those agricultural fields and all that kind of stuff.
There's actually a building being built in Japan right now that encompasses all that stuff. It's like it has industry, it has shopping, it has entertainment and housing all within one building. And it's like it's, the building itself takes up about four city blocks. It's about 70 stories tall.
Right. Okay, then I would just add one thing, that the advocate for that notion is named Richard Register, and the name of his book is Eco-Cities, Building in Balance with Nature.
Check it out, Richard Register, Eco-Cities. That's about it for the Lau Graham filibuster here for an hour and a half. Actually, it's been a lot of fun and educational having these guys in the studio. And you're welcome to stay, by the way, as I continue my endless rant. I've got a half an hour ranting to do.
Well, don't forget about the benefit for free radio, Robert. You haven't announced that yet.
I don't believe in helping free radio. They are a criminal conspiracy. I'm not going to get into that. I do want to point out to you again, you are missing, those who are listening to this and not in the Georgiana Kirby School, Bruce Kirby School at 117 Union Street, the opportunity to harangue against homeless vandals, child molesters, and dirty campers who have been known to plague the downtown neighborhood. So if you want to get in there and say a few words, you can do it. Hey, Ron, thank you for coming in. And for those who want to help Ron or get more information, please give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can also contact City Council, 420-5020, and say, hold up, give a chance for Ron to express his, you know, to actually present documentation of his plans, and we're going to be following up on that subject. Here's a little bit from Phil Oakes on a subject that may become a little too current very soon.
Dodger Rag. Oh, I'm just a typical American boy from a typical American town. I believe in God and Senator Dodd and keeping old Castro down. And when it came my time to serve, I knew better dead than red. But when I got to my old draft board, buddy, this is what I said. Sarge, I'm only 18, I got a ruptured spleen, and I always carry a purse. I got eyes like a bat, my feet are flat, and my asthma's getting worse. Yes, take my career, my sweetheart dear, my poor old invalid ass. Besides, I ain't no fool, I'm a-going to school, and I'm a-working in a defense plan. I got a dislocated disc and a racked up back. I'm allergic to flowers and bugs. And when the bombshell hits, I get epileptic fits, and I'm addicted to 1,000 drugs. I got the weakness woes, I can't touch my toes, I can hardly reach my knees. And if the enemy came close to me, oh, I'd probably start to sneeze. Yes, I'm only 18, I got a ruptured spleen, and I always carry a purse. I got eyes like a bat, my feet are flat, and my asthma's getting worse. Yes, think of my career, my sweetheart dear, my poor old invalid aunt. Besides, I ain't no fool, I'm a-going to school, and I'm a-working in a defense plan. I hate Joe and Lye, and I hope he dies, but one thing you gotta see, that someone's gotta go over there, and that someone isn't me. So I wish you well, Sarge, give them hell, kill me 1,000 or so. And if you ever get a war without blood and gore, I'll be the first to go. Yes, I'm only 18, I got a ruptured spleen, and I always carry a purse. I got eyes like a bat, my feet are flat, my asthma's getting worse. Yes, think of my career, my sweetheart dear, my poor old invalid aunt. Besides, I ain't no fool, I'm a-going to school, and I'm a-working in a defense plan.
That, of course, is Draft Dodger Rag by Phil Oakes. So, other things have been happening, and I guess there was a trial, I should say a pretrial today, for Layla who is, you may have heard her story on the station, as well as read about it on the Indie Media website. Good website I continue to urge people to go to is santacruz.indiemedia.org. Very good website. Layla went to court today in a pretrial. She's facing trial because Officer, what is his name? It starts with Martin. That's it. Officer Martin arrested her as she crossed the crosswalk. This is by her account from Foster's on Laurel Street. When he told her he could write her a ticket because she had paused briefly or smirked at him or some such thing, he did. And then he accused her of resisting arrest and obstructing an officer and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that all is going to court. And actually, we got a brief update on that from Tom Belote, the Cop Watch man. And I'm trying to see if I actually have that available here. Yeah, it's coming up. Let me see here. Motion to dismiss will be coming up on January 14th, and it's been moved to Watsonville with Judge Barracuda Barton. Trial readiness will be January 26th. Trial starts January 31st, so we'll stay up to date on that one. Then there's other things coming up shortly for those who like to follow the court antics. Jan Golder, who's the man who Dick Wilson, the city manager, barred from all the city offices at one point and who was arrested most recently for going in with me to Parks and Rec to look up the documentation behind the latest lighthouse field harassment restriping and the various developments of Lighthouse Field, apparently designed without any kind of paper trail or public discussion or comment to eliminate campers and daytime parking of camping vehicles up there. And we couldn't get one single piece of paper out of the Parks and Rec Department. But what we did get was Jan Golder arrested because he'd been given a restraining order a year and a half before, which had been incident to something else, which had expired, but he still was taken to jail. And he's going back to court on December 13th to revoke that protective order formally in Department 1. That's going to be 8:30 a.m. Monday, December 13th. I also want to get an update from Richard Quigley. And Richard Quigley, those you may know, is a former KSCO broadcaster, a freedom fighter. He has his own website, USFF, for United States Freedom Fighter, www.usff, I think it's .org or .com. You might want to check it out. He's also been instrumental in getting the overly well-paid Sheriff Mark Tracy to take a powder, an early powder. I'm trying to reach him on the phone, but I'm finding that I'm actually getting a recording. Hey there, Richard Quigley, dial in 427-3772 if you're there. We want to talk to you. And we can't get a hold of him yet, but we're a little bit late in the game. I think we're supposed to call him a bit earlier in the evening, but he's fighting for... Well, he was kicked off radio station KSCO, or they put him on leave of absence. I called it a kickoff, but he's much more generous in his description of it by KSCO's police-friendly Michael Zwirling, the head of KSCO, who, instead of supporting their noon Thursday talk show host, which Quigley was, they had him, under pressure from the police department, removed because he was critical of certain policies in the police and the sheriff's department. So that's he filed a lawsuit, and that's particularly what the radio station didn't like. They didn't want to be seen as supporting a lawsuit or having one of their employees respond to the First Amendment abrogation by the sheriff's department, having an armed, uniformed police officer come into the radio station and ask that Mr. Quigley not be allowed to be on the air. That's what Kim Allen was directed to do by Sheriff Mark Tracy, according to the deposition that Kim Allen made, which I haven't read, but I've heard paraphrased. And suddenly, coincidentally, Sheriff Mark Tracy is resigning. Isn't that interesting? Several years early, although he's getting paid big time in spite of that. What is it, $140,000 a year, even in resignation pay and in retirement pay. I'm looking at a press release I'm going to read for what's happening tomorrow at this Huff press conference. Huff, of course, is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. The press conference I've mentioned briefly before on the show. It's at 11:30 a.m. in front of the courthouse, and it's going to be immediately preceding the Rotkin Human Rights Day Jamboree. Rotkin is having his doing some human rights posturing with the other mayors at noon, high noon, in front of the courthouse. Though what human rights he's talking about in Santa Cruz, we're going to have to really listen very closely to try to figure out and look around very, very closely to try to find them. And that, of course, is what this press conference is about. Half an hour before he speaks on the steps, Huff members are going to be talking about local developments. I, as I've mentioned on this station, recently won a lawsuit when Rotkin's police department, Sergeant Butchie Baker, in fact, arrested me for political tabling, which one would have thought was one of the political rights that might be considered a human right downtown, but not apparently by the Santa Cruz Police Department when merchants don't like the boycott you're calling for because the merchants want to press on with the city redevelopment agency, actually, gentrification of the downtown. That was the fenced-off area in front of New Leaf Market that I was urging a boycott of the local businesses to encourage them to stop. And they didn't like that idea. They had me removed from the sidewalk illegally, and I have a check for $2,500, which will be presented tomorrow at this public press conference on real civil rights for homeless people, not the bogus, phony show Human Rights Day stuff that Rotkin is going to be doing later. Also, I'll be announcing new developments. I guess it'll not just be me, but others will be announcing new developments in the Heil-Krohn case, which I'll be talking about in a moment. But first, let's see who is calling in here on the air. Let's take a listen here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Really?
Yes, you are. Sorry about that screw
Robert
there.
The man north?
That's the one, and you must be the infamous Richard get him off KSCO at all costs Quigley that Sheriff Mark Tracy is apparently grinding his teeth about these days.
Sheriff Mark Tracy?
Well, isn't he still sheriff?
I don't think so.
Well, I guess I know he was going to retire. Did he actually step into that shadowy retirement zone?
Well, they had a going-away party for him on the 1st of December. Whether or not that means anything, you can never tell with these people.
Wasn't there a special dinner, a breakfast this morning in Tracy's honor out there at the Seacliff Inn?
Well, yeah, I think so.
Did you get out there to that breakfast?
No.
Because I heard that Jerry Henry was going to check it out. He's the man who's been banned from the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, and I guess he's been facing further harassment from
other shopping centers. Yeah, they're trying to run him out of his home. He lives in Aptos, man. And they're all jacked up and running. And they got that crazy-ass goddamn sergeant down there in the sheriff's office. She's running around telling people how to make him look bad.
Now, you're not talking about Sergeant Amy Christie, are you?
Well, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I understand that she was the color guard this morning for Sheriff Tracy's little departure. A color guard for some bitch that has no more regard for the First Amendment than he has is just a little bit over the top. But what do I know?
So this was, can you tell us a little bit about Tracy's farewell breakfast? Did you get a report? Did Jerry Henry attend this breakfast?
Yeah, he said he went down there, and he thanked everybody and all the people in the chamber for being so helpful in his neighborhood watch shit, you know. Which is, that's the guise that they use for their social engineering program.
Mm-hmm. And that of course, has involved for the last, 7 or 8 years around the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company.
Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center.
What was Gottschalk's and what was, I guess, the liquor store, but now is a part of Safeway as it's expanded. The attempt to get the riff-raff moving along.
Yeah. Get them downtown on a Pacific Garden Mall where the cops down there can beat the shit out of them, steal their blankets, and treat them like crap. You know the story, man. You end up with the ones that everybody gets run out everywhere else. They show up there.
Well, I know that you say Jerry attended this farewell dinner for Tracy. Did he give a hug to Mark Tracy as he was leaving office?
No, I'm, I'm, I I think it's fair to say, even though I wasn't there, that if you've heard that went down, you can pretty much doubt the credibility of the person that said it. I don't think there'd be a lot of hugging going on there.
Well, I know that you attempted to get on the Chamber of Commerce because you had some suspicions that Tracy's intervention with KSCO to get you expelled as a radio broadcaster was somehow connected with your advocacy for Jerry Henry and other young people and their right to use the public spaces at the Aptus Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center.
Well, certainly the day he came into Kim Allen's office foaming at the mouth, ranting and raving that Kim had to go down there and tell that radio station to get me off the air was the day that I did a show that was exclusively about that whole situation. So I think that's probably a pretty fair guess. I think that when part of the conversation was that Kim Allen was supposed to explain to KSCO that he stood four square behind that letter they were going to be getting from the Aptos Chamber of Commerce, that he probably, you know, and I think it's a real good indicator. He sat on the board of directors, you know, just like our.
And you tried to actually join the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
But you were denied that opportunity.
Yeah.
Now, is this because you weren't in a legitimate business, or you're, I'm not sure if you were clean-shaven or bearded at the time.
Well, I would like to be able to tell you that, but you see, they don't have to tell me that. Did you miss the part where I said the sheriff was on the board of directors?
Well, certainly the sheriff might have been on the board, but he wouldn't run the board of directors, would he?
Well, no, but I mean, when the chief hired gun in town sits on the board of directors of some organization, they certainly don't have to explain why they do what they do to the likes of me.
So, in other words, you never got a straight answer as to why you were refused your membership.
Well, there would be no reason for them to give me a straight or a bent answer because they're, you know, I'm just some goddamn riffraff piece of shit. Why would they have to do that?
So you're still pursuing a lawsuit against Mark Tracy?
Yeah.
What is happening with that lawsuit?
Well, you know, that's a hard one to call. We've been doing some settlement discussions, but it looks like that's pretty much. At this point, it looks like that's pretty much all in the shitter. We're gonna start doing depositions and move forward, just tear up some ass.
Now, you had some hopes for the new sheriff. What's his name? Acting sheriff.
Robbins.
Are you losing hope? Or how are you feeling about Sheriff Robbins?
Sheriff Robbins has the support of the troops in numbers that vastly exceed the numbers of people that support Tracy.
Right, but what about his record as far as you're concerned?
I don't know much about him. I'm looking forward to meeting him.
Okay. And
I know that he was the guy that set up the operation of all those substations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing. And you know what happens when you assume. I'm being careful not to assume anything. I'll wait till I ask him. But it would seem reasonable, since he was heading up all those substations, that he was the one that probably figured out that Pee Wee Hemingway would be a good choice for that substation, and that Clubber Christie there would be a Clubman Christie would be a good follow up for. I mean, one pervert after another in there. They haven't got a decent human being in that damn sheriff substation since it opened.
You're referring to the substation next to the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company?
Yeah.
In the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center.
The one with the no trespassing sign out in front of it.
Let me ask you about this area. This is the area from which Jerry Henry has been barred. And I know that Paul Maragonda, district attorney, apparently has gone back to court to try to expand the area, the no Henry zone, from the Aptos area, Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center area to a broader area. What's happening?
Oh yeah, no, they've got this Amy Christie thing, whatever it is.
Sergeant Christie, yeah.
Yeah, whatever it is. It went down to the next shopping center down at the coffee shop down there. And encourage those people, you know, told them, if you'll call and complain, we'll make a bad record on this, and then we'll get enough of that, and then we'll throw him in jail. So they managed to cut the people at Pacific Roasting Company involved, and they have made a couple of completely bogus reports, which is typical of Jerry's conduct.
Are you suggesting that a conspiracy to deprive Jerry Henry of civil rights under color of law?
Oh, Jesus.
How can you say such a thing?
I'm suggesting that. I'm pointing at it.
I see. Well, you're obviously some kind of fanatic lunatic who doesn't understand that this is Santa Cruz. This is a civilized community. It can't happen here.
Did somebody drop you on your head since last time I saw you, Robert?
Well,
what the hell was that about? You were being facetious. I'm sorry.
Now, Jerry goes back to court, I want to point out, at 10 a.m. on December 17th.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, I guess, in Department, I'm not sure, is it one or two? But
it's
Department 2 on December 17th, and that's not too far down the road to try to clear away these stay-away orders so we can actually use public spaces, enter public restaurants. And I want
let's go with that.
And also, I mean, I'm going to kind of jump into this because we're running low on time here. I think even people who are poor and homeless should be allowed that opportunity. I think Jerry may have felt the same way about people who are young and possibly homeless, because some young people leave their homes. They're between places. They're, you know, they don't quite feel at home at their family's residence. They haven't yet set up a residence of their own. They assemble in public places and they, you know, they sleep where they can. We are going to down some Huff members tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock to McDonald's on Ocean Street to determine if there is some truth to the claims by two homeless men, Roger and JJ, that they were evicted into the rain even after they'd bought coffee at the McDonald's. And we'll find out what's going on with that. Then we're going to be moving to the county courthouse at 11:30, half an hour before Mayor Mike Rotkin shows up to talk about
some Fuhrer shit. The next thing you know, somebody will be giving him a Nazi salute.
Exactly. Now, that, of course, will be discussed tomorrow. I did, of course, give you're acting like a Nazi salute to Mayor Crone several years ago when he was mayor, and I was arrested, held in jail for 5 hours. And that case, though, was initially turned down. They never filed charges against me, but we sued the city. It's going back to federal court with the city has been being sued again. I'm going to be talking about that tomorrow. And then there's another lawsuit coming up. Paul Sanford and Kate Wells, both attorneys, have filed a civil rights lawsuit to defend the rights of local homeless John Maurer, who's twice been cited for profanity while soliciting. He placed a small sign in his hat protesting police harassment as he sat in one of the limited legal locations permitted the poor on Pacific Avenue. And Commissioner Irwin Joseph refused to allow a constitutional determination of the case. So attorney Paul Sanford is taken into federal court. That was filed last week ago, Monday. Now we're going to be talking about the homeless deaths. The death of Scotty, who died of exposure under the Soquel Avenue Bridge. Wagner, who froze to death on a bench outside of Mayor Rotkin's council chambers. The bench, it turns out, is the one nearest the fountain area. For those of you who know the Santa Cruz City Council, want to maybe put a couple of flowers there to remember Wagner. And we're going to be talking about the failure of, and this probably isn't one that you're going to be too excited about yourself, Richard, urging a resolution for the immediate withdrawal of troops from Iraq, which I think at least, is long overdue. I say send over Bush. Let's withdraw the rest of the military. And if you want to say something about that, I don't want to be accused of censoring you, so feel free to say something. Or not, as the case may be.
Kill the ragheads. Yeah, let God sort them out.
There you go. Certainly a dissident point of view here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Richard, anything you want to say more before I launch into my last 9 minutes here?
Well, yeah. If you want to go at George Bush and the U.S. for being in Iraq, I want to point out just one thing that I find really curious.
Okay.
And that is, their first election is for who, not what. And it would seem to me that what we've already done is we've decided what kind of government they can have. And then we're going to allow them to decide who gets to administer it.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at that thing and I'm saying, well, why don't we have them vote on what kind of government they want? And if they want a democratic republic like we have in the U.S., then they can vote for that.
Right.
But if they want a dictatorship that goes to the most badass, you know, killer monster, then they can have that.
Right.
It would seem to me that we're starting a little bit further into the parade than we ought to be with. If we're going to give them freedom,
mm-hmm.
it should start with the freedom to choose what type of government they want.
Sure, self-determination. I mean, it's like if, you know, there's some people who don't like Bush, And I know that you're not necessarily one of them.
No, wait a minute. Don't.
Right. I'm not assuming anything. I just said you're not necessarily one of them.
Well, but you see, there are some things that I really do like about the man, but he's not my kind of Republican.
I got you. What I'm saying is, though, that if the French came in to overthrow Bush, because maybe, you know, suppose they found the election results really, we had determined an ironclad proof that the election results were rigged. Bush stayed in office anyway, with the collusion of his pals on the Supreme Court, and the French government and the German government moved in with troops to evict this illegal government and allow new elections.
We'd kill him.
I think what we would say is, fuck the French and the Germans.
Yeah,
we can settle our own fucking affairs here, just as the Iraqis are saying to us, we'll shoot your asses down in the streets and anybody who collaborates with you. Get the fuck out of our country, is what they're saying.
No,
I think.
It's a whole lot different.
Well, that's my take on it.
It's a whole lot different. Well, the thing that gets me, Robert, when you talk about the list of things you're going to be talking about tomorrow,
please come on down if you'd
the
like.
The ones that are most important and the ones that I think that you have the best chance of succeeding with and I support are the fights for the lives of the for lack of a better term, downtrodden. And I noticed that your list is substantially longer than what I met you. You know, of just atrocities, and it bothers me because I realize that the tide is running that way. But damn, man, you know you work hard, and you've got some little victories. You know, you got some stuff tucked away, but I try my very best to try to get people to pay a little bit more attention to those kinds of things, and give guys like you and Jerry and folks like that more help. And I wish for you more support in the future, less fights to fight, and more success. And I think that's long overdue.
Hey, thank you, Richard. And for those who want to tune into what's been happening with you lately and what you're fighting with as far as the helmet law, which we can't talk about now, but you're welcome to call back on Sunday. I'd like to hear from you there. You have a website, which is www.usff.org. Is that right?
No, com.
Com. USFF.com.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And if people want to read about me, all they do is go to Google. Type my name in the search column, and I'm coming up number one again.
Richard Quigley, Q-U-I-G-L-E-Y, Quigley. Thank you, Richard. Let's talk again, and I think you may have some other interesting news for us as we move forward.
Sure will, Robert. Be happy to share it with you and your audience.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, my friend.
Hey.
Good night.
Bye-bye. We're rolling into the last few minutes of the show here. Here's an open letter to President Bush. It's time to reveal the real casualty figures by Ralph Nader. Dear Mr. President, on June 30th, 2004, I wrote you an open letter urging that your administration include in the U.S. casualty toll in Iraq, 1, injuries in non-combat situations, 2, personnel who have come down with disabling diseases, and 3, cases of mental trauma requiring evacuation from Iraq. You did not respond, nor did Senator John Kerry, who received a copy of the letter. I should have added 3 additional categories which are also not part of the official casualty count. 4, fatalities that occur after U.S. military personnel are brought stateside. 5, soldiers committing suicide in Iraq. And 6, injuries and fatalities incurred by corporate contractors operating in the Iraqi war theater. On November 21, 2004, CBS's 60 Minutes led its program with a segment on the subject of uncounted non-combat casualties. They interviewed badly injured soldiers who were upset by their being excluded from the official count, even though they were, in one soldier's words, in hostile territory. The Pentagon declined to be interviewed, instead sending a letter that contained information not included in published casualty reports. Quote, more than 15,000 troops with so-called non-battle injuries and diseases have been evacuated from Iraq, wrote the Department of Defense. John Pike, director of GlobalSecurity.org, told 60 Minutes that this uncounted casualty figure would have to be somewhere in the ballpark of over 20, maybe 30,000. What's your problem here? The American people need to know the full casualty toll of U.S. personnel in Iraq and know it regularly and in a timely fashion. Not to do so is disrespectful, especially of the military families, but none more so than of the soldiers themselves. As a severely wounded Chris Schneider told CBS, every one of us went over there with the knowledge that we could die, and then they tell you you're wounded or your sacrifice doesn't deserve to be recognized or we don't deserve to be on their list. It's not right. It's almost disgraceful. Soldiers like Chris Schneider, Joel Gomez, and Graham Alstrom want to know whether you're going to continue to stonewall their desire for official respect. What shall we tell them and others who seek that simple, decent official recognition? Please do not think that because you are a chronic non-responder to critical questions, you will be able to delay this growing demand indefinitely. Your hit-and-run photo opportunities with the troops just doesn't cut the mustard. Stand up and face it. It is the right thing to do by them. Sincerely, Ralph Nader. And we're running into the four-minute zone now. Those of you who want to get in touch with me, please give a call to 423-HUFF. Come on down to the protest either at McDonald's at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning or at the county building at 11:30. There's also a couple other things happening. Human Rights Day is tomorrow, by the way. So it would be nice if we could actually assert some real human rights. From 1 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, day after tomorrow, the Self-Defense Workshop is cooking at San Lorenzo Park in the Benchlands near the footbridge. Check it out. Techniques of defending yourself against assault, whether from a police officer engaging in a false arrest, from a thug simply thugging on you, or who knows, from a domestic partner who's gone too far. Check out Self-Defense Workshop, San Lorenzo Park, 1 to 4 p.m. on Saturday. I got other stuff here, too, but I don't think I've got much time for it. Not to mention I'm coughing myself to death. Interesting medical marijuana article I was going to read, but I think that's going to have to wait until I come back on Sunday. I will hopefully also have some details on what's actually on the agenda for the Ron Lau property. You can check it out probably tomorrow after it appears on the website, the city website. Also want to point out that we've heard nothing yet. There's going to be nothing on the city council agenda urging the U.S. to get out of Iraq, a resolution that has twice been presented to Mayor Scott Kennedy and has also been presented to Mayor Mike Rodkin. The backdoor scuttlebutt has it that Ed Porter and Tim Fitzmaurice may be cooking something up for the second meeting in January. Thank you very much, all the dead and wounded Americans and the many more dead and wounded Iraqis who will be piling up like cordwood by that time. Not that we could necessarily have a key effect on that and changing that, but waiting a month and a half scarcely seems the right thing to do in this situation. Interesting article, by the way, that I'm going to be passing on about Rumsfeld's disgraceful performance where he was called by troops. Why do soldiers have to dig through local landfills for pieces of scrap metal and compromised ballistic glass to armor our vehicles? Have already been shot up, dropped, busted, picked the best out of the scrap to put in our vehicles, taken to combat. The soldiers say we do not have proper armament. And Rumsfeld's response, according to Juan Cole, is deeply dishonest and typical of his theory of psychological manipulation in politics. He conceded that not every vehicle has the degree of armor that it should be desirable for it to have, but the Army was hurrying to plate more vehicles. And he basically told the servicemen, screw you, obviously, saying that they're doing it at 400 a month. It's not going to resolve the problem, which the soldier pointed. It simply is not true, as Rumsfeld implied, that soldiers in a tank are as much at risk as they are in an unarmored truck or vehicle. There have been a number of reports of rocket-propelled grenades just bouncing off Abrams tanks. And it looks like we have that's it for the end of the show. Tonight we're going to return on Sunday. Come back then at 9:30 or come on down tomorrow at 9 o'clock at McDonald's or at 11:30 at the county building and give a call to 423-HUFF between times.
The Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British War. A young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't marching anymore.
a thousand different fights. I was there at the little big horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more dying, but I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the war, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is that worth it all? For I stole California from the Mexican land, put in the bloody Civil War. Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all war. Oh, I must have killed a million men, and now they want me back again, but I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the war, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese sky, set off a mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leader's screaming when they close the missile plant. The United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I ain't marching anymore. No, I ain't marching anymore.
Back in 1949, they purged out all the communists and socialists and homosexuals out of the labor unions, leaving behind virile American types who took major stands on all the major issues of the day. And now I'd like to dedicate a song to George Meany and other freedom fighters around the world. A song called Links on the Chain.
So happy, do all the things Orleans.